Swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone! Cassis does it again.
Again.
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
And he swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss! Strike three, it's over!
The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Welcome back to Play Tessie. It is episode 138. If you're listening on drop day, it is September 30th. So we are almost on to October, where the Red Sox will not be playing baseball. This is the official podcast of 162 Down, also known as the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Before we get going, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening, wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, rate 5 stars. We're also on YouTube, so you can find the WEI channel there, and we've got a Play Tessie playlist there. Find all our episodes there, all that good stuff, and you can hit the thumbs up on those videos. Also on the socials, at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. Here with Sammy and here with Pat, and the season is over. Like, we have been doing these podcasts since way deep in the last offseason, and now we're through the season. The Red Sox finish at 81-81. Exactly. So obviously not the finish that we'd hoped for. And, you know, I guess you can take solace in the fact that there was less uninteresting baseball this year than there were the last couple of years. But it's just not a successful season. We've been through those discussions over and over again. And, you know, we're going to learn so much about where this team is going to be positioned moving forward if you're listening on drop day, their end of season press conferences are going to be today, and we're going to have another episode tomorrow breaking all that good stuff down. That was not where Tom Werner said full throttle last year, but it's where stuff like that could be said, because you're going to hear from Kennedy, you're going to hear from Breslow, you're going to hear from Cora. You're probably going to hear a lot of nothing, because if they've learned anything from last year, if you make promises and don't keep them, it's worse than just saying nothing at all. So they've probably learned a little bit and will say nothing, but we'll be there to break it down anyway. For this one, there's actually, like, weirdly a ton to talk about, so much to talk about that there's things we're, like, not even gonna have time to get into today. Like, Tristan Casas said, like, some weird things this weekend that we probably won't have time for. Ref Snyder's options probably gonna get picked up. We probably won't have time to talk about that. Garrett Whitlock seems open to a bullpen role. Probably won't have time to talk about that. But the first thing, and just to welcome Sammy and Pat in with a firecracker here. Kenley Jansen left early, and they took his nameplate down just to give the summary of what happened here. He talked to Cora. He left. The team removed his nameplate from his locker, which I learned is unprecedented when guys leave. Like, James Paxton has been gone, and they didn't remove his nameplate. So teammates are upset, and Sean McAdam wrote a piece where he said that teammates are upset but not surprised. Apparently, according to McAdam's piece, Kenley has been aloof at times and didn't know teammates' names sometimes. Cora later said in his media availability before the game that he told Kenley to go home. So it's kind of been a whirlwind of stuff with this story, and I'm glad we're just kind of getting right into it, because it kind of feels like the most, like, pressing and, I guess, nerved. I don't know. It rubbed me the wrong way. Personally, but I want to give you guys a chance to go first. Sammy, let me kick it to you, man. Like, Kenley Jansen leaving, do you care? Like, what are your thoughts on this moving forward? Give me what you got.
So I think this is kind of a two-part question. You got to look at it from two different perspectives. One, from the point of view of the players. Two, from the point of view of the fans. First off, if I were a player on the Red Sox, God forbid, I would be pissed. How could you not be pissed? This is... you could call it a lost season. You didn't make the playoffs. To leave with 3 games left is not a good look, no matter how you slice it, barring some crazy situation, which I think we have a good idea that that's not the case. There's nothing out of the box happening to Kenley or people around him. So, bad look. And if I were a player on the team, like I said, I'd be pissed. From the fan perspective, I could not care less. The season was already over. Kenley's 38 years old. He wants to be with his family. He's not coming back next year. I already, in my head, he's already not part of the Red Sox anymore. I can't muster up the energy to care and get upset about this. If this were June, I would be furious. I'd be freaking out right now, completely out of my mind. But it's not. It doesn't affect me at all. Doesn't affect the team at all. It's not going to affect the record at all. Who cares? Move on. So those are my kind of two takes in one, I guess you could say.
So for me, I just think about the other guys there. And I think about, we were there on Saturday and we saw guys who have been on the injured list for, you know, some of them for several days, some of them for weeks, some of them for months, some of them haven't played a single game that year. Like Lucas Giolito was still there. David Hamilton has been out for the year for a while. He was still there. Devers was still there. I mean, you could go down the list. Garrett Whitlock's still there. Liam Hendricks still there. They're all still there. And there are so many guys on this team that I'm sure would love to have gone home a little bit early, spend a little bit more time with their family. And they didn't do that. And I don't know whether it's because they didn't think they could, or maybe they couldn't, or maybe they didn't think it was right. But all I know is those guys were all there. The only other one who had left was James Paxton, who I have a little bit more sympathy for because he was with the team for like a week and a half before he died on the field for our sins.
He didn't die. If you're listening, he didn't die. He's not dead. He got injured. Not dead.
Just his knee. Just his knee.
Yeah.
But like, I think about, we've talked a lot this year about how leadership has been an issue this year with the Red Sox. They lost Justin Turner and they've lacked leadership. And Kenley Jansen is one of the few veterans on this team. Certainly one of the few mid-30s and above guys on this team. And you want those guys setting the example for the guys in the organization moving forward. Like, you've got guys like Trevor Story, Rafael Devers, Jaron Duran, and definitely Alex Cora, who have talked this year about the importance of posting. And why is posting important? Playing every game that you can. It's important because you're there for your guys. And I just thought this set a bad example for the guys in the future. Like, Sam, you say as a fan, like, why would you care? This is why you should care. Is because
I feel like it's the other way around. This is the perfect way to show what not to do. This is like, this is spin zone for me.
Well, hold on, Sammy.
Well aware.
The issue is, I think, and granted, I didn't pay close attention to the teams that Kenley Jansen played for before he got to the Red Sox, but I bet there's a good chance that on those teams, some veterans that got hurt went home. And that's maybe why Kenley thought that that was appropriate. I don't want guys in the future to think, Kenley Jansen was able to do this, so if I have an established career, I make a few all-star teams, I'm in my mid-30s, and now I'm out for the year, I can just abandon my teammates.
Well, based on the reaction from guys like us, the team, the people around the team, don't you think that the players would probably be like, all right, cool, let's not do what Kenley did. This was not good. Look at the response he's gotten. I don't know. I'm very aware this is an overly positive take for me. I've been so negative lately. I'm trying to spin this one positively. I feel like he set a good example of what not to do in a situation like this, if that makes sense. So hopefully guys like Slayton, who might have the same role as Kenley next year, hopefully he says, okay, if the things are not going well, I'm not going to abandon the team. And I also don't think this is something that guys should have to learn. It's kind of funny that we're even talking about it, but
I hope.
Yeah, man. It's like everyone says, you always see something you've never seen before in baseball. And I guess this could qualify as that.
Yeah, I certainly think that hopefully something as strong as, and granted, I had no idea before the other day that removing the nameplate is such a big deal, but hopefully that sends the message to guys that, hey, like, he did this, but that's not how you're going to do it. Pat, what was your reaction to this? And what was your reaction when you read, because I know we talked and we texted about this, but like, what was your reaction, A, when it happened, and B, when you read the Sean McAdam piece today?
Yeah, I mean, Kenley leaving in general, I was like, that's odd. I was like, I don't remember anyone ever doing that before this. And then he comes out and says, Cora told him to leave, and then there's nothing more to it. And I'm like, that, like, everything about it was just so strange. And then the McAdam piece comes out, and I'm like, okay, I feel as though he probably just didn't want to be around anymore. So I don't know. But my thing is, imagine looking at this scenario from the eyes of Liam Hendricks and Trevor Story, busting their asses because they want to play so badly. And those are two of the three like legit vets on the team this year, aside from Rafi. Those two guys worked their tails off, even when they were out, to try and get back. Trevor did it, Liam did it, and Liam is still around the team. Hasn't played a single game for the Red Sox, and he is around the team. That's got to piss them off. Has to. Absolutely has to.
Yeah. And to take it a step further, Liam Hendricks, after the final game of the season, threw like a multi-hour party just for like Red Sox staff, like security guards and stuff. Like Liam Hendricks threw a whole thing for those people. And it's like, that's a freaking nice ass thing that he did right there. And he didn't throw a single pitch this year. He did not have to do that. And you just look at the other side of it and it's like Kenley goes home. And the thing is, it's like, it's the another reason that I give Paxton the pass over Kenley is like, if Paxton stuck around, it's like the dude's ready to retire. And it's like a month plus that he has left. Whereas Kenley, it's just like, man, it's 3 days. Like, do you see the difference in tone from Red Sox fans and teammates, like the hit pieces that are out on Kenley Jansen today and the, all of the words from Red Sox fans? It's like, it's completely 180'd. And, you know, from a fan perspective, it's like Alex Cora the last couple of years has done a really good job of giving guys the opportunity to get that ovation on the last day of the season. And, you know, it would have been nice for the fans to be able to show Kenley some love, even if he was hurt. You know, fine. Maybe they do. I don't know. I feel like they would have found a way to do something since it's so obvious he's not going to be here.
Oh, he's going to get booed if he ever pitches at Fenway again after this. But question for you guys. You saw Cora said after the game, I told him to go home. If you have any questions, just, you know, send them to me. I'll answer the questions. I have a pretty strong opinion on this, but do you guys think he was just kind of like falling on the sword just to kill any drama that was bubbling up?
Yes.
Or do you think that he actually was like, Kenley, go home?
I think yes. I think he fell on the sword.
Yeah. I thought that was like the ultimate. And Cora's, I think that's great of him to do because this drama doesn't benefit the Red Sox other than what I said earlier. Maybe the guys learn from it what not to do. So just another reason Cora's a great leader, a player's manager. I feel like that's almost derogatory sometimes, but I think it's a good thing to relate to the player as well. So a really weird situation. Like I said, I can't recall, and I'm racking my brain right now to think of when a veteran went home early. And I know it's like, it's Kenley and you need the context and everything, but like, I really liked him. And I liked how he was pissed in the offseason for the same reasons that we were pissed. And there were some people who didn't agree with that. Some people thought, like, stop complaining. You're on the team. You should be fired up, ready to go. But the way I looked at it, like, we're complaining about ownership not investing enough in this team. He's resonating with us. He's saying the same thing. So I liked it. And I feel like I was more of a Kenley fan. I'm just speaking for myself, not the rest of the people on the show. But I felt like I was more of a fan of Kenley than most people. And it's hard for me to stand up for him after this. Like, I personally don't care because, like I said, I've already separated him from the Red Sox in my head. Like, he's already gone in my head, so I don't really care. But it's just, it's so avoidable. It was 3 days. It's not like a month. It's not a month of the season. So just a weird situation.
Yeah. I think the other thing, too, is I think the whole Cora told me to go home. I think it is the truth. I think it's a stretch of the truth. I guarantee that Kenley approached Cora about like, hey, look, if I'm on the IL, you and I both know I'm not coming back next year. There's no need for me to be here. I'm sure that conversation went along and Cora said, okay, go home. I don't think it was Cora outright being, you know, you're hurt, you're on the IL. If you want to go home, feel more than welcome. Like, I'm extremely confident that Kenley was the one who brought up going home. And I'm sure Cora gave him the okay. I don't think he told him to go home.
Yeah, no, Pat, I agree 100% because if it went the way that you said it didn't right there, if Cora just said, like, you're on the IL, just go home, the nameplate doesn't come down there. Like, clearly something wrong happened. And, you know, even if Cora, whether it was reluctant or not, even if Cora said go home, like, I would hope that one of the leaders of the team would say, no, I'm going to stick it out 3 days. Like, it's nothing. Like, I'm a leader of this team. And
is he a leader? Do we think he's a leader? Or is he just old?
I think he was a leader. And honestly, Sammy, I think he stopped being a leader. Like, I remember the beginning of last season. Tell me if you guys remember this. Zach Kelly had a bad outing at the beginning of 2023. And Kenley, like, took him under his shoulder and made sure he knew, like, it was going to be okay. And I thought that was so cool, but starting maybe at like the midway point of last year, like, we didn't hear stuff about that anymore. And this year we heard him complaining, which I agree with you, Sammy. He was totally within his rights to complain. I saw a lot of people saying that because he complained or he was wronged, and because the Red Sox lied to him, it made him okay. It made it okay that he left and wronged his teammates. I think that opinion is crazy, because I don't think that ownership in the front office is the people that he's hurting here. I think it's his teammates are the main people that he's hurting here. So they're not the ones who screwed Kenley over. Like, the front office and ownership are the ones that screwed Kenley over. So I thought it was unfair.
I just don't know if you can be a relief pitcher and be a leader, because you're not in the dugout with the guys most of the time, and you have a very specific role. Maybe he's a leader among his peers, the other relievers, but
yes.
Trevor Story being the shortstop and doing defense story camp in Texas.
Story camp.
Let's go to story camp. I think that's cool. That's leadership. I just don't know. I don't know. You guys think I'm a leader? I'm old. I'm old as hell. I don't think I'm leading anything, but I just think
you're not a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, true. Damn. Hey man, I'm 30 in a few months. It's not too late for me to make a run. But I lost my train of thought. You
old pump ass.
My tires too much. Sorry, I'm old. I'm forgetting. I just don't know if I want to call him a leader. I think that's kind of an age thing. Maybe he helped in some ways, but I do think the context matters. I don't think it's okay that he left because he was disgruntled with ownership. But I do think when you look at the big scheme of things for Kenley, older guy, towards the end of his career, he said a million times the one thing he wants is to close out the World Series. That's his goal. He's not looking at money. We criticize guys for looking at money all the time. He's like, no, I just want to win. So I don't think it makes it okay. I do think it matters, though, the context. You have to understand why he's a little pissed off. He's been lied to like us. So
hold on, Sammy. He came to the Red Sox for the money. They gave him a shit ton of money. That's why he came. The Red Sox were coming off a non-playoff appearance. He was coming from the Dodgers and the Braves. He knows what a contender is.
Yeah, but it's the Red Sox. You figure they're going to become a beast any moment. I mean, they went from worst to first and won the World Series 2012 to 2013.
Or you could just stay with the Braves and they're great. And if it's not about the money, take a discount and stay there. Kenny is not some sort of great guy that he didn't turn down any money. And he's probably not going to turn down money this year, though. I'm sure he'll be a little bit more reluctant to go to a non-contender this time around.
I bet he's going to take very low amount and go to the Dodgers. I'm positive that's what
he goes to the Dodgers too. But I bet they pay him. I bet they pay him good.
Yeah. I mean, he got $16 million for 2 years, right? $16 million, 32 overall. That's good money. That's good closer money. But I'm sure he could have gotten that elsewhere. And it's different, playing in Boston. It's an iconic team. I don't know. I have a little bit more sympathy for him than most people, and I understand that. But it doesn't make it okay. It's important context, but that doesn't, preclude him from finishing out the season like everybody else. I just can't. It's so hard for me as a fan, not speaking for the players. I just can't really give a shit. It's already over. Let's move on. Now we have a guy that we can look at and be like, oh, let's get Kenley back in the World Series in 2025. And crush his dreams. Red Sox, Dodgers, only on Nesson.
I just think as a fan, you want what's best for the organization. You want what's best for the team now and in the future. And I just think that this was bad. But we got to move.
It's a story. The guys know not to do this now. Don't do this.
I hope.
PR for Kenley and his brand.
I hope. But we got to move on to the next. We have three things here that I want to make sure that we cover. And we're going to have to go through it quick because we've got some stuff that we're doing here at the end. But first, Nick Pivetta makes what we believe is his final start with the Red Sox. They certainly were talking before and after the game. They, as in Cora, Pivetta, the broadcast, everyone seems to think this is, including us, we all think it's going to be Nick Pivetta's final start. He pitched really well. Got a solid ovation, tipped his cap on the way back to the dugout, sat with AC on the dugout steps. I guess if you guys have burning thoughts on the Pivetta era, it's okay if you don't. It was a pretty, solid guy for 4 years. Maybe a couple of cool moments in 2021, but for the most part, just a solid guy where you didn't have too many stories on. So it's not going to be an era that we're going to remember. But if you have anything, and if not, is there any chance that you guys think he gets the qualifying offer?
No.
Yeah. I after reading a couple of the publications, or like a couple of like, I think it was Cotillo wrote something like the Astros were super into him. And we all know that Pivetta is an analytics darling, throws a bunch of pitches. And we obviously have seen that ceiling. He struck out 10 guys in a row this year. Didn't he do it multiple times too?
Yeah. Like, can I be honest with you guys? If yeah. the Reds, okay, qualifying offer, I know we don't have the exact number, like 21 million, right?
21.
In that ballpark? Okay.
I think it's going to be 21.
If the Red Sox, who need an ace, if they offer Nick Pivetta the qualifying offer, I'm going to fucking lose my mind. I'm going to go absolutely insane, and you might never hear from me again, because that would be, we basically have to do this whole season over again, I think. Like, I can't do that. Please do not. Thanks for your service, Nick Pivetta. Wildly forgettable tenure, let's be honest.
Yeah,
like, people getting sentimental about Nick Pivetta, please stop. He had a good moment in the playoffs. It was cool. It was 3 years ago. Goodbye. Enjoy Houston. I'm sure you're going to win the Cy Young next year, of course.
He's so going there.
Yeah, he's going to go to Houston or Tampa Bay. It's going to be a disaster for us, but whatever. It's not going to happen here. Please spare me the sentimental Nick Pivetta stuff. I can't do it. He's not coming back.
Give him a little applause and stuff like they did, but it's not like, yeah, no, I'm not going to get all sentimental over it. And in regards to the qualifying offer,
what would you make for him?
All right. Yeah. Good stuff. Like that, you know? Pat. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's very quiet.
That's very quiet.
I'd go like,
What is the context of that?
Like he's walking out of Fenway. I'm just like, hey, Joe, you got a sound?
One clap. Like Randy Moss, one clap. No, but in regards to the qualifying offer thing, I would only give it to him if I knew for certain that he was going to turn it down. If they give it to him and he takes it, that's a disaster. And like, to be honest with you, if they do that, to me, you got to just eat half of it and find a way to trade him.
Don't, not worth the risk, man. Imagine if they're like, he's going to turn this down and then he takes it.
I know that would be a disaster, but let's get on to the next thing. Cause again, we have a bunch to get to. Quinn Priester made his first Red Sox start today. Looked good. Five innings, one run, couple strikeouts, nine whiffs, averaged around 93.5 on his sinker, which is his fast pitch, and topped out at 96 overall. Looked pretty good. Thoughts on his start and where do you want to see him in the pecking order for next year?
Yeah, I thought he looked good. I don't know how many whiffs and chases he's going to get. He's not, I think, one strikeout today, if I remember correctly. I don't have the box score in front of me.
It was two, I think.
Okay, two. So low strikeout rate either way. Sinker baller, so you don't need the Ks. But, you know, encouraging. He had some not so great major league numbers with Pittsburgh. So a lot of people who were kind of like casually following who he was were a little bit down on him when the Red Sox acquired him for Nick York from the Pirates. So I thought it was about as encouraging as you're going to get. And as far as next year, I'd like for him to start in AAA. I think the rotation is a question mark at the 1-2 slot, whichever. And then you have Houck, Bayo, Giolito, Crawford. Those are your four guys that you can slot in. I assume Pivetta is gone. I don't know if I made that clear enough a minute ago. But yeah, I think Priester and Fitz, that is exactly the kind of depth you want in AAA. Young guys, some upside, team controlled. You don't need to start them at the major league level. I don't think either of them expect to be at the major league level to start the season. I'm sure they'd love to, but expectation-wise, doubt it. So yeah, AAA for Priester and Fitz as well. But I'm encouraged by both those guys. I know we're talking about Priester, but I feel like you got to lump in Richard Fitz as they're kind of both the same level, similar situation. So we spoke at the deadline about how not having AAA depth pitching-wise, starting pitching-wise, is an issue, and it seems like they quickly got it. So no complaints in that regard.
Sammy, I agree with you, I agree to lump him and Fitz together because that should be the Red Sox first and second depth pitching options. That doesn't mean that they're going to be depth forever. As you saw this year, like Tanner Houck entered the season as potentially a depth pitching option, and he ended up making almost every start this year and being the Red Sox best starter this year. Cooper Criswell was a depth option. He made a ton of starts for the Red Sox. Like, these guys get in a lot of games, and I'm comfortable with those guys getting in a lot of games. I'm not comfortable planning for them to get in a lot of games so that when guys get hurt, you're going to the next tier. So I will say, I hope not, man, because I will say over and over again this offseason, get a number one, and then you've got Hauk, Bayo, Giolito, Cutter, and then your depth guys are Priester and Fitz, whatever order you want to put them in, depending on how they look. I'm okay if things really go bad, if you want to stretch Garrett Whitlock back out. I'm way more on board with that than other people are going to be. And you'll still have Chris.
You are?
I'm okay. He's not going to be in my rotation, but if guys get hurt, I would sooner stretch Whitlock out than have Cooper Criswell starting like 6-7 games for the Red Sox next year, personally.
What? How? How do you have Criswell was great this year.
And his results were solid.
Come on,
Sammy, you watch the games. Come on.
Results. At the end of the day, you need results. And I want Whitlock, like he said the other day, whatever keeps me healthy. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Stay in the bullpen. Give us 2 innings at a time, max. So, by the way, we do have to relay to the people. We were at Fenway Park on Saturday. We saw Quinn Priester. He's jacked.
He is jacked.
Yoked. My God. He came out of the friggin' clubhouse, and Gordon and I were like, Jesus, looking like Tyler O'Neill. So, only good things can happen when you got yoked guys on the team like O'Neill, Duran.
I like Priester's ceiling, and I don't think that him being a depth option means he can't reach that. Like, you see it with the Dodgers all the time. They enter the season with so many guys as depth options, and they all get plenty of opportunities to prove themselves. And guess what? If they prove themselves, then they get to go in the rotation. If the Red Sox get to develop a bunch of young, controllable starting pitchers, look what you can do with that. Look how much we all talk about how much the Red Sox are going to need to trade to get a young, controllable starting pitcher. If they get to a spot where they have a number of those guys that are expendable, then God, that's just even better. That's even better. Next thing, Masa Yoshida. I actually have to find the name of the guy who reported this because I guess it's like a Japan reporter. Hold on, I'm trying to find it. But here we go. Yoshida may need off-season surgery for his right shoulder. It was reported by Carlos Yamazaki, who is a Red Sox beat writer for Tokyo Sports Press. He reported it. Yoshida talked a little bit about it after the game. They're going to evaluate him, figure out his options and stuff, like
right
all
shoulder,
that stuff.
Right shoulder?
Yeah, right shoulder.
He throws righty, right?
Yes. Hits I'll double check that. We haven't seen him throw in ages. Let me check on it for you, Sammy. Okay. But I think you're right.
What the fuck could he have done that hurt his shoulder? He hasn't done anything in weeks.
He could have slid. Yeah, he throws right. But
no, I'm joking. That sucks. Sneaky, a big deal. Because like we've said 100 times on Play Tessie, Yoshida is a good bat. I think we all agree he can hit. But he is not what the Red Sox paid for. He does not fit this roster particularly well. I think, and I won't speak for you, Gordo, I think it would be best if the Red Sox found a way to move that contract, whether that means attaching talent, paying a little bit of money, or if they get like a decent return, maybe a contract swap. You can look at a friend of the program, Sean Bergeron, and also Robbie Hyde, both had a similar idea. You can move him to Seattle, maybe. Maybe Seattle takes him. You take that Luis Castillo contract. You add something on. 2 friends of the program. I like that idea. A little tough to make that work.
That's dreamland right there. That's never going to happen.
Why not? What if you attach something to it?
Because Castillo is super good and Yoshida's contract is a disaster.
Castillo's not that great anymore. He's regressing in a big way. You see his numbers this year?
Yeah, they were good. He had like a mid-3 CRA, right?
No, it was like 3.8 something. He was like good, but not Luis Castillo that you're used to.
How many innings did he throw? He had a 3.64 ERA, made 30 starts through 175 innings. That would have been the second best pitcher on the Red Sox.
Yeah, so like good, but not the guy who had like a 3.1, 200 strikeouts kind of guy. So, and you know, he's like 33, 34. He's getting older. So I don't think it's going to happen. I'm just saying like a concept like that where you swap contracts, a team that needs a bat, you get a pitcher, something like that. Probably not going to happen. But point being, got to find a way to move off of Yoshida. And if he's hurt,
it's hard.
Yeah, you're almost definitely not moving him.
Yeah, I think if he's hurt, you're going to... I mean, even if healthy, I think you would have had... Like, I always ask myself, if Masa Yoshida were a free agent and was guaranteed to get a 3-year deal, what would be the AAV on the deal that he would get? And I would say probably like 7 million, like 3 years, 21 million is maybe even a little bit high for him.
Yeah, so like, what did O'Neal get for a year?
He was a trade.
Right. What is he under? What was his money this year?
I don't think it was much. I think it was like six million. Yeah. I'm trying to think of an example.
Adam Duvall got 1 year, 10 million as a 34-year-old, I believe, from the Red Sox. Jesus, Yoshida.
Yeah, and it's 3 years. It's not something that teams are going to be interested in taking. I agree the Mariners are maybe the perfect team because it's like, all right, our ballpark stinks. Get guys who can just hit the ball, put it in play. Our strikeout numbers suck. Their strikeout numbers are... I think they finished worse than the Red Sox, right?
Yeah, I believe it was Mariners, Rockies, Red Sox for MLB. Yeah, isn't that great company to keep?
Good stuff, man. The Rockies and the Mariners.
Yeah, dude. All
yeah, right, that's a good destination, but him being hurt, like, are you ready to pay down close to that entire deal? Because I don't think teams, after the way last season finished and now the way this season is going to finish with him potentially needing surgery, who the hell is going to want to be committed to money on him, any money at all, 3 years from now? That is a scary place to be for a guy who doesn't play the field.
You'd have to get a team like, trying to think, like, who's a bad team? Like, maybe the Rockies. Like, the Rockies take him contingent on you giving them a really good prospect. Because they've spent money in the past. They're not a big spender by any means, but they've spent money in the past. So I'm sure if they took on that Yoshida contract, but you would have to give them, like, Yoelin Cespedes or someone really good. I don't think it's worth it at that point. By the way, here are the numbers. Red Sox are third. So Seattle had 1,625 strikeouts. Colorado had 1,617, so basically the same. Big gap between them and the Red Sox.
Okay.
Thank God.
Let's go.
Red Sox still had 1,570 strikeouts, which is worse than the Pirates, the Athletics, a few other teams, the Reds, and the Marlins. So that's not good. It's bad, in fact.
It's not a good place to be, and honestly, that's what's so scary about trading Yoshida. I think even despite the strikeout stuff, you still have to do it, but him being the only player on the team that was above average in terms of strikeout percentage and understanding that you need to deal him is a scary place to be, because that just means you're digging your hole that's already existing, and you're digging it even further, and you're going to have to do a couple things at least to dig yourself out of it. And I think one of the things you're going to have to be doing is praying that those prospects you got come up, Anthony, Teal, Campbell, Meyer, they come up and don't strike out a lot at the big league level in their first season. And that's a big ask, but those guys are going to have to play to figure out how to hit big league pitching. So it's kind of a tough place to be. This isn't a problem that you're going to snap your fingers and solve in one offseason.
The more I think about it, the more I am interested in Alex Bregman. It's such an issue that he's 31 years old, but the fit is so good. It's such a good fit. I just don't think they're going to do it. You need contact.
If only he could hit. That's the thing is, like, I just don't think he's not going to reach an 800 OPS in any of the years with his next team. Maybe the first year.
He was like 770 this year, 768. Yeah, not bad. 118 OPS plus. He's not, I don't know. Maybe I think, again, I've said this before, but I think he's going to be the guy this offseason who signs in like February, super, super late signing, because he's good, but trending down, and he's 31. So, like, what do you do with a guy like that? And I also believe he's Scott Boras.
Here's the thing, Sammy. I'll compare him to one guy that's been a free agent in the past. And he did, and it's a free agent who signed late, but it was because of the lockout. It was Trevor Story. Yes.
Sorry. You're going to say Matt Chapman.
No, I say Story because Story had trended down for a few years before he became a free agent too. And I think the Sox signed him with confidence because of his speed, because of his defense. Well, actually, his defense was questionable at the time, but you knew that you were going to have a guy that was going to go out there and set the right example. And I think you were going to hope that the bat could at least be what it was in his final year before free agency, if not rebound to the year before, and it hasn't been. When I look at Bregman, I see a lot of Trevor Story.
I believe, if I remember correctly, Trevor Story had an 801 OPS the year before he signed with the Red Sox. So in my head, when they signed Story, I was thinking 801 is pretty good, but I'd like better than that. And now I'm like, oh my God, I'd take 801 OPS.
Yeah.
Please. I would be thrilled with that at this point. So, yeah. So now I'm just talking myself out of Alex Bregman. Thanks a lot.
It's tough because he gives everything else that they would need. Defense, leadership, contact, right-handed bat, uses the Astros version, whatever the Crawford boxes, uses that well. I get it.
Yeah. Cora connection.
Yeah, Cora connection. So like it, yeah. I mean, it's something that I think there's a good chance that, especially as the contract numbers potentially go, the predictions go downward, it's something that I could see maybe a few of us being sold on at some point, but we'll see. As it stands now, I keep seeing 150 to 200 million, and I just can't get behind that.
200 but million for Bregman?
I saw someone, I want to say it was either Robert Murray or Bob Nightingale say a month ago that they could see him getting close to 200, which I think is crazy. I don't think
I'd say closer to 100. He's going to get more than 100, of course, but I'd say closer to 100 than 200 million. That's so much for a guy trending his direction. I don't know. I maintain the fit is great. But the price, yeah.
So, okay, one thing we did before the season, just to transition us here, because we have so much stuff to do and we're really not trying to make this like an hour and a half, 2 hour podcast here. But we made predictions before the start of the season, all sorts of stuff. So I want to get into those predictions and see, I don't know, I guess it's going to be, because like, it's not like quantifiable, but we'll see who in general had the best, I guess, job predicting. We had a few segments and I went back and dug them up as best I could. There was a couple that I couldn't find a couple of Pat's answers to, unfortunately, but here we go. We had breakout star, slept on player to have a big year, team Cy Young, stolen base leader, biggest general concern, biggest general strength, biggest player concern, predict Trevor Story's season, most home runs on the team. Will Kenley Jansen finish the year on the Sox? Which new relief pitcher? Is the answer to that no? No, I'm kidding. Which new relief pitcher will be the most impactful? Which big three prospects will make their debut? Hottest take and win prediction. All right, so I'm going to run through this. First, breakout star. I had Garrett Whitlock. Pat had Vaughn Grissom. Sammy had Masahiro Yoshida.
Oh, ooh, boy, we did not get it. Who's closest?
I would say, ooh,
Sammy.
Nobody.
It's hard. I
Masa, because he was on the field the longest. Jesus, yes. What a bar. What a low bar.
Yeah. The issue is, who do you feel better about of those three than you did on opening day? None of them.
No, none.
Wait, it was Masa, Vaughn,
and Yoshida. Oh, yeah, and Whitlock, yeah.
Who do I feel better about? I feel the same about Whitlock. I feel worse about Vaughn. I feel worse about Masa. So I guess Whitlock.
I feel worse about Whitlock because I now, and like this is coming from me, I used to be the ultimate Whitlock starter guy, and even I now have questions about whether that's smart. Certainly not with next year's Red Sox team. You heard me talk about my rotation earlier, but. So yeah, no one gets any love there. We'll try to keep a vibe of who's doing well, but no one did well there. All right. Slept on player to have a big year. This was one of the ones where I couldn't find Pat's answer. But mine was Tyler O'Neill and Sammy's was Trevor Story. So
we both nailed it. Great. Next one.
Next one. Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. Give me some love. Yeah. Okay. Team Cy Young. Sammy and I picked Brian Baio. Pat picked Garrett Whitlock. So none of us got it right, but Baio's Sammy and I did better best. Than Pat.
Baio's second best. Not a terrible pick. Just lose Pat again.
We just lost Pat again.
Pat keeps leaving us. He doesn't want to hear about the Cy Young.
For those like literally, he has come in and out of this show like 10 times and we keep pausing and resuming. I don't know if it's going to happen with him today. But next stat, stolen base leader. I had Sidon Rafaela, Pat had Sidon Rafaela, Sammy had Jaron Duran. And Sammy, you win this one, and you got it right. It was Jaron. But I just want you to know how damn close it was to being David Hamilton, because Jaron had 34 and Hamilton had 33 bases.
If he didn't get hurt, then probably would have been Hamilton. But I predicted that. I said on our previous show, David Hamilton is going to hurt his thumb bunting against the Mariners. So just expect that. Or no, not the Mariners, the Angels. I don't know. But he got hurt. But hey, great season for Hamilton. He really broke out, not in a huge way, but he's definitely a major league caliber player at the very least. So even though he didn't win the Red Sox 2024 stolen base title, very vaunted. Everyone wants that. Still a good season for him. So I'm glad one of us got something right.
Yep. Sedan finished with 19, which was far from Jared's 34. He got caught 10 times in his 29 attempts, which is interesting. I know that was a problem for him in the minors. So he's really fast, but stolen bases, that's something, getting a good jump, something you could work on.
You know what? Sedan plays Major League Baseball like people play MLB The Show. Just like swinging at everything, making crazy catches, stealing all the time, getting caught half the time, but still going. Like, I kind of respect it. He's got to tone it down eventually, but he's having fun out there at least.
Yeah. He's a guy that to me needs to take a step forward in a lot of areas next year, but we'll have plenty of time to talk about that. Yeah. Next stat, biggest general concern. I said offense. Pat had defense. Sammy had starting rotation. To be honest with you,
I think Pat.
I would give it. It's tough because everything killed them this year.
Yeah,
defense.
The one thing that was bad, like the Red Sox had a good rotation, what like ERA kind of like right below four. The offense was top 10 in terms of runs scored. It had its issues, but overall they scored a lot of runs, and the defense just sucked all year long. It went up down a little bit, but overall sucked. So give it to Pat.
Defense, I'll give you that because defense was the one thing that really just wasn't good start to finish. Like rotation killed them in like July and part of August. Offense was their saving grace at times in the season, but was also one of the worst in baseball at times in the season. So yeah,
you were defense, closer than me though. You were definitely closer than me. I don't think,
weird.
The rotation, like where would they be without this rotation? Can you imagine us having this conversation back in March when we were at spring training and we were talking about like, do they even have a rotation? I'd like you guys to field the rotation. And here it was their biggest strength for most of the season. So
despite the injuries too, despite the injuries, which
thank God for the injuries, because if you didn't have the injuries, your ace wouldn't have gotten a shot.
Yeah, but Sammy, you picked the most obvious answer here. I think most people would have said the rotation. It's interesting that I don't want to call it their biggest strength, but like definitely not their biggest weakness. Biggest general strength here, I had bullpen, Pat had bullpen, Sammy had the offense. I remember when we did this discussion at the halfway mark, like we talked about these predictions at the All-Star break. And at the time, the bullpen prediction was the one that we said was good. Like we said, yeah, bullpen's been their biggest strength. And it's just unbelievable how much that is not the case from the second half of the season.
I would say the bullpen overall, this obviously needs context. Overall, it was pretty average. Like you had a decent closer, decent bridge to get to him. But it was the what do you call it? The front end of the bullpen. The back end is the closer and your setup guy. So I guess the
middle relievers.
End, yeah, your middle relief and your non-leverage guys. That was the issue for a lot of it. But yeah, you were very down on the offense. I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
But like you were down. You had a good reason too. I remember you said it and it made me concerned. I was like, oh, that's a good point, Gordo, but we'll see.
Well, I think my reasons were they didn't have quality right-hand hitting and that they had a lot of swing and miss in the lineup. And that those ended up being the two reasons.
We also, none of us thought Jaron Duran would become God tier, like top 10 player in Major League Baseball for 2024. So
It
just goes to show you, like you can have all your stat sheets, all your steamer predictions, everything you want. It's still baseball. It's hard to predict. Nobody in the world predicted Jaron Duran to lead the league in doubles and triples and also be maybe a gold glove defender. What a freak in a good way.
All right, we're going to go through these a little bit quicker now. Next one we had was biggest player concern. This is another one we didn't get Pat. I couldn't find Pat's answer to. Sammy, you had Nick Pivetta. I had Masa Yoshida. I think I take this one.
Yeah, you definitely take that one.
We have predict Trevor Story's season. Newsflash, we all stunk. I said fully healthy, 800 OPS. Pat said 24 homers, 25 steals. Sammy said 25 homers, 23 steals. None of us get any love here. We were all very wrong. Most home runs, I said Devers with 39. Pat said Casas with 36. Sammy said Devers with 41. The answer was Tyler O'Neill with 31. So no one, I mean, I guess Devers got more than Casas. So I guess Sammy and I get a little bit of extra love, but no one got it right. Will Kenley Jansen finish the year on the Sox? Sammy and Pat said no. I said yes, but I gave like a weird, I said yes because he's going to get
right.
Hurt.
We were right. He didn't finish the season. He went home. We got it right. Take that, Gordo.
How funny is it? That was such a random thing to put on this. Like, these were all such general predictions. Why did I have...
Because there was a huge conversation about Kenley on an expiring deal. He was disgruntled at the time. He wanted out. He was an obvious trade candidate, and we didn't think the Red Sox would be a game out of the playoffs at the All-Star break. But I remember it changed like in May or June. We started talking like, you can't trade Kenley. You can't trade Kenley. And of course, we went back and forth on that a little bit. But yeah, he was the obvious trade candidate at the time. And like I said earlier, it just goes to show how much shit changes over a long, long season.
Yeah, no kidding. Because I mean, we talked about the bullpen conversation where Pat and I said it was going to be the biggest strength. I was on the you can trade Kenley Jansen if it lets you add in other areas boat for a long time this year, because I thought the bullpen was such a strength, and it looked like it was. And then it just became very evident that you couldn't trade Kenley. The bullpen just fell apart. And speaking of bullpen guys falling apart, we asked the question, which new relief pitcher is going to be most impactful? This basically was a question between Justin Slayton, Greg Weiser, and Isaiah Campbell. All three of us took Isaiah Campbell. So what, we were all
Campbell?
Yeah, we all did.
Oh, what the fuck was I thinking? Really?
We all took Campbell.
When did we record this? Did I not see Slayton pitch?
I think you and I had both seen him pitch in spring training.
You know what? I picked Slayton to be on one of Bradfo's shows. I picked him to be the guy that everyone falls in love with in spring training, I think. Unless that was on here and we haven't gotten to it yet. I don't know. But that's, I remember saying like, everyone's going to like him because he's going to throw hard in spring training. And that didn't really happen, honestly.
We recorded this, if I'm not mistaken, like, I think it was like our episode right before the season. So you and I had been to spring training.
Yeah. I still remember, crazy how, like, it's such a long season, but it goes by so quickly. I remember our opening day episode with you screaming like, it's opening day, let's go. And I was all fired up, and now it's over.
Now it's over.
Pure mid.
Next question. Which of the big three prospects make their debut? Obviously, none of them did. I said Meyer and Teal would, and you guys both said just Teal. So you guys get more love on that than I do. However, none of us get it right. Hottest take. I said Tyler O'Neill would get the Andrew Benintendi contract, which was 5 years, $75 million. He had a really good year, but he's not getting that. Pat had Tanner Houck to the bullpen by the end of the year. And Sammy had Casas starts the All-Star game.
Oh, nailed it. All right, so he was at the All-Star game as a reporter. So I think that was true.
He was the starting analyst. But yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe I get the most love on this one, but maybe not, because it's like, it was like rooted in O'Neill having a really good year, and he did, but he's not getting that. And last but not least, win prediction. I had 78, Pat had 83, Sammy had 82. The Red Sox finished 81-81, which means Sammy got the closest by a singular game, which...
Ayo.
Like, even though people like generally had this team somewhere in between 74 and 84 wins, getting one game off is very impressive, no matter how you look at it.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm bummed. I wanted to get the trifecta of crystal bomb series predictions and then nailed the season record. Damn. I feel like I'm never going to get that close again. That was like that's so hard to do. I'll probably never get it, but at least got close. Can hang my head on that.
I don't know who wins this thing. It was fun to go over, but I feel like we were all just like very meh, like not very good.
It's hard, man. Like, these are not, if people will be like, oh, you thought Trevor Story was going to hit 25 home runs. Fuck you, buddy. It's hard to predict. So I don't know. We got to do this again next year. This is good though. Oh, yeah. I think we'll improve. The more we do this, the better our predictions will be. It's just hard. Like, think about how negative the offseason was, and then we went to spring training and the vibes were so good.
Yeah.
So it's like you have to balance the emotions, clear your head. If you're ADHD like me, it's really hard to do. So I'm glad we got close a little bit on some of these.
It's like it's hard because you're the day before the season, so you want to be super optimistic. And I feel like some of these were rooted in optimism, but... couple things before we get on out of here, and I'm just going to, Sammy, let you have a chance to give your take here. So obviously, Joe Castiglione's final game as the Red Sox radio broadcaster was in the final game of the season, and the Red Sox did a really cool, they did a few really cool things for him in the final game, including having his broadcast go on the NESN telecast on TV for the ninth inning, which I thought was awesome. They gave him like a tribute in the, I believe it was the seventh or eighth inning, maybe it was going into the eighth or something. And that was really cool. The whole team comes out of the dugout, tips their caps to him. Like, very cool. Looked a little bit like the Don Orsillo one, which was also very cool. And before the game, they had a whole pregame ceremony where like a lot of Joe's favorite players from the past came and they all stood behind him and he gave a speech and everything. And, you know, a lot of the people that you thought should be there were there, like Breslow, Cora were there, and right. Warner, I mean, and Linda Pizzuti were there.
Everyone would be there, right? Like, there's no way anyone would miss it.
And that's why I bring it up, because...
What do you mean, Gordo?
I'm telling you, I don't know if you've heard this, but the principal owner of the Boston Red Sox was not there on the field with Joe Castiglione, who was the Red Sox broadcaster for, I believe, 22 seasons. Or sorry, John Henry's owned the team for 22 seasons. Joe Castiglione has been broadcasting for 42 seasons. So he's been the broadcaster for the entirety of John Henry's tenure there. And he wasn't, and John Henry couldn't be there to stand on the field in support of Joe Castiglione the day before he retires. I don't know if there was a quote unquote scheduling conflict. That's usually what they say.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it was maybe John Henry was afraid of getting booed by the fans, which he would have been.
Oh, dude. I can't wait for the next time he grows a spine and shows his face in front of the crowd. But please carry on.
No, just all I have to say is I'm not surprised, but I thought it sucked. I was disappointed. This ownership group does a lot of things that disappoint me, but I guess give Tom Warner his credit and Linda Pizzuti her credit for being there. I don't know if it's worthy of credit, but because John Henry has lowered the bar at this point, you know, he wasn't at the Devers press conference. He doesn't go to a lot of things. So I guess you got to give them credit, but I wish he had a principal owner that wanted to be at the ballpark. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, I've kind of shifted my views on the Red Sox ownership as people. Like, I really do think that when Tom Werner said the full throttle thing, I think he meant it. I think he actually thought they were going to spend. And I think John Henry was like, no, buddy, we're not doing that. Why'd you say that? Sam Kennedy, I don't know if I'll ever love the guy just because I can't do the PR speak. It just makes me so angry. I know he has to do it, but I just can't. I can't stomach it. Linda Pizzuti, I couldn't give a shit. John Henry, though, barring a health thing, he's 75 years old. He's an older gentleman. Barring a health situation, I wish I was surprised that he wasn't there. And I'm not going to go on another rant about how much I dislike John Henry nowadays, but I think that his actions say a lot about the man he's become. So shame that he wasn't there. But Red Sox fans, Joe Castig, we all together didn't need him there. That was for the people who care, for the people who are actually fans of Joe Castig and the Boston Red Sox. So you don't need people who are just there to collect the check to be in the building for something like that. So I think it was a beautiful ceremony for Joe. I love how he looked a little uncomfortable in the spotlight. It was very wholesome and just an awesome, like, he's a legend. I don't even know. It's hard for me to quantify. I feel like I'm not even qualified to be speaking on someone like that. He's just so great. And we were very lucky to kind of grow up in the era with Joe Castig, and he has a hell of a legacy. And it was really cool hearing him pass the torch to friend of the program, Will Fleming, at the end of the broadcast. So, yeah, man, great ceremony. I'm bad at sentimental stuff, so I enjoyed it as much as I could. That last fly ball to Rafaela to end the game felt like it was going in slow motion. It was like, holy crap, the ball's in the air. Once he catches it, that's it. And that was it. So, beautiful ceremony. Not surprised John Henry wasn't there. Don't need him there. Don't think anyone really wanted him there anyway at this point. So, congrats to Castig on a great career.
Well, I should just point out, Sammy, that he's just done full time. Like, he will come in part time. Yeah. You will still hear him, but just not for the full 162 or however many he did. Yeah, it's nice that he keeps saying like, I'll be around, but you know, it's not going to be the same. But Joe, I feel like you should say some words because you had a role today.
I did. I was producing the game for WEEI, and boy, and I mean, in the most beautiful way possible, it was a little bit of chaos, but that's just because of how many lives and how many players were impacted by Castig. I mean, we had Pedro come in the booth and Roger Clemens. They were both in the booth at the same time. And that was one of my favorite lines that Joe had, was that he felt incredibly lucky during those first couple of years, because every 5 days it was either Pedro or Roger. And that was pretty damn cool. But I mean, other guys like Jackie Bradley Jr., I mean, him catching that first pitch, I thought Joe had a great reason for it. He said, I picked Jackie because Jackie doesn't drop it. But he just had so many lives touched. And I even had my own mother texting me when he was signing off that she was getting emotional, and everyone was getting emotional. And when you listen to it, you can hear Will and you can hear Sean. And, you know, no disrespect to Will Fleming, he's been with Joe for 6 years, but even that small amount of time, the fact that he was able to hit Fleming hard like that in the emotions and in the feels. And Joe is such a selfless person. He's incredibly selfless. So I think you said it best, Sammy. No one deserved the kind of ceremony and celebration that he had. And I'm glad that the people that actually wanted to show up and honor such a great person, a great broadcaster for all he did, I'm glad they were there. And yes, it was a lost series, a lost season or whatever, but at least we got to end it on a high note by giving that kind of tribute.
Dude, that's so sick that you were like, you weren't just there. You actually played a big part. You got that forever. That's awesome.
I mean, I didn't get to say like, hi, Pedro. I didn't get to like introduce myself or anything like that.
He walked by the three of us on Saturday at Fenway. And I'm glad he didn't walk over towards us, because I totally froze, just because that's like, that guy was like my hero growing up. I was like, Pedro, little guy, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Small
dude.
Yeah. Come on.
Think you could take him, Gordon?
God, no. Pedro could be 80 and I couldn't take him. That dude.
Gordo, why do you have a black eye? Got beat up by Pedro Martinez.
But
at Fenway on the field.
We saw it. He'll go after Don Zimmer. He'll go after anybody.
Yeah, Gordo, you're not off limits. He'll whoop you, dude.
No, I'm aware, and he could. I would not go toe-to-toe with Pedro. I don't care. I don't even think I don't know how tall he is. He might have been my height. 5'11". Okay, so he's even bigger than me. Whatever. Don't want to fight about it. But yeah, shout out Joe Castig. It will never be quite the same. But I do hope he's around as much as he seems to say. But obviously, I think a lot of people know that when you're closing out a chapter, like he said so many times today, like, yeah, like Roger Clemens said he retired three times and came back. Like sometimes you say those things just to kind of like allow yourself to get through a situation. So like obviously no one's gonna hold anything to him, but we will miss him. And as we're in sentimental mode, Sammy, I want to take the chance to just thank everyone who listens to this show and who tuned in starting last off season and, you know, through the season. We released a ton of podcasts. We're on episode 138? Yeah, 138 of these episodes. And we have people who listen to every single one of these things. And it just means the world to me that people care about what we have to say. And, you know, it all started with Bradford, with Rob Bradford caring about what we had to say and bringing us together and us doing the Bradford show last year and that sort of evolving, because Bradford went to bat for us and helped us, you know, get this show for our own this year. And I think that we've all done such a good job with it. This show doesn't happen without you guys, without Sammy, without you, Joe, without you, without Pat. It just none of it's possible without, and it takes like a ton of dedication. It's a grind to podcast about a full baseball season. There's not a lot of people who even want to watch 162 games, but to want to watch 162 games and then tune into podcasts about them or record podcasts about them, like You have to be all in on this team, and we certainly are. And there's never been a question about that with any of you guys. So I've just been very appreciative to do this with you guys and hope to do it with you guys for a long time.
Yes, my sentiments exactly. I think the biggest takeaway I have from becoming, a podcaster, this is my first time ever doing anything of this magnitude, is recording after a rough loss is the best and worst thing ever, because all I want to do is go to bed and stop thinking about the friggin' Red Sox, but then we have to talk about it for 90 minutes to 2 hours, and it's painful, but it's also therapeutic. So I appreciate you guys for being my impromptu therapist when it comes to the Red Sox. I am a little bit insane how I let this baseball team of guys who mostly don't know who I am, let them affect my mood on a day-to-day basis, but I can't help it. So I appreciate you guys going through it with me. And then Brad Foe for giving us this platform. It's so funny. Like the first time I went on radio, when we ended, I was like, Rob, thank you so much. That was so cool. Like dream come true to be able to talk about the Red Sox on the radio. And he just goes, ah, yeah, yeah. Glad you had fun. And that's just classic Brad Foe. It's nonchalant about it. And man, yeah. Thank you to Brad Foe. Thank you to you guys. Shout out to Coop as well, who was with us earlier in the year. He helped us out as well. And then Joe stepping in on short notice like a beast, staying up till 3 a.m. on his birthday. I still feel really bad about that. So thanks for doing that. And yeah, man, fun season.
Look, just get me a car for my birthday and we're good. Just get me a new car.
I got that money. No problem. Yeah, I can't wait to get to spring training. I feel like we're going to fucking crush it this year. So yeah, we're going to be doing a lot of podcasts in the off season. So I was going to be like, we'll see you guys next time, but we'll be back here in like a few days. So
no, we'll literally be back in your ears tomorrow because of the freaking press conference thing. Like we'll be there.
Oh yeah, dude, we're going to have so many Sam Kennedy quotes to break down.
It's going
to
be so much fun.
Always gives us good stuff. He totally says stuff that is very relevant. Yeah. So that's coming tomorrow. But yeah, guys, seriously, I'm really bad at sentimental stuff, but thank you for doing this. I had a friggin' awesome season, even though we had the most mid team of all time, literally 81-81, pure mid, great meme. So I can't wait to do more of it. Go Sox.
And I'll just say this really quick, because I know this is going really long and we've all got other stuff to do, but thank you. You too. I look specifically at you too, and then I see an invisible screen where Pat is, because he's still with us in spirit, for bringing this guy on literally how long into the year? 1 month into the year, and we go through this change, and all of a sudden, you text this guy who was producing for Bradfell on Baseball Isn't Boring every Saturday, saying like, oh, he kind of knows what he's doing. You bring this guy on, and you roll with him, and you stick by his side pretty much since the whole time. And, you know, it was so fun to make those videos. You know, I don't think anything will top the Celtics video where we got the most traction. Kos is predicting the Mavericks, and then him also in spring training saying he would eat Jaren Duran. I don't think anything will top that. But to see what you guys got out of the players when you asked them who they didn't want to sit next to on the plane, what their biggest pet peeve was, I thought that was really fun to make, and it makes those grinding hard hours worth it. So I thank you guys, because you guys are the meat and potatoes of the show. I don't get to make that kind of content if you guys aren't out there getting the scoop. So salute to you both and Pat.
It's just, and we got to wrap this thing up, but it is very cool to think about how far, like Sammy, we touched down on the plane in Fort Myers, and Rob Bradfoe was there at the airport waiting to pick us up, drives us straight to the ballpark. And I think like literally, but within a half hour of getting into his car, we were like sitting in the dugout interviewing Tristan Casas.
We met Tyler O'Neill and started doing media with Tristan Casas less than an hour after landing. And like, are we moving on to favorite moments real quick? Cause I can just roll right into that.
Yeah, do it.
The island question to start off the season. That was by far my favorite moment of the year. To some background, I have a pretty big fear of public speaking and speaking in front of a camera other than when I'm sitting at home on my laptop. So Bradfoe kind of like put us in the Red Sox dugout, called over Casas, who I had never met at the time, And he was just like, go in there. So Gordo asks, I can't remember what you asked, because I was pretty much having like a panic attack in the dugout, not showing it. And then I jumped up and asked him the island question. And my first thought was like, God, that was a stupid fucking question. That was terrible. Like, he's going to like think we're idiots. And then Casas just blessed us with the greatest answer, saying that he would bring Jaren Duran to be with him stranded on an island if he had to pick a teammate, because he would eat Jaren Duran's delicious ligaments and muscles. So, yeah, that was my favorite moment. It was a tough one for me, even though it might have been like hard to see on camera. But if you really listen closely, you can hear how shaky and choppy my voice was in that moment. But man, I'm glad I kind of got thrown into the fire, because it really worked. I think people liked that. And then we parlayed it. Gordo, you jumped in on it too, asking the island questions. And then Nessun aired it about like who the guys would have on their island. And then Jamai got all upset because nobody picked him to be on his island. But then we said, no, Jamai, you can do it. So there's going to be a different question next year. It's just to be determined what it's going to be.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, my favorite moments from this year all come at the very beginning of spring training, just because those were like, not only was that, because like obviously we'd recorded a ton of podcasts by that point, but that was the first time that you and I got to spend like a really, really, really extended period of time, like actually in person together, and get to know each other a lot better. And you know, we went through a lot of the same stressful moments together, because like you talked about when you thanked Rob for letting you on the radio and he just kind of brushed it off like, yeah. Like,
yeah, whatever.
It's like run of the mill. This is what he's like done for his life, like for his career. This is just what he's done. But for you and me, it was our first time doing it. It was our first time speaking to the players. Like we interviewed some players over the computer on Zoom. But with those, it's like, you've got like a list of stuff like in front of you. You're never going to like run out of things. Like you don't have, like, it's like different when you're actually around the team and interacting with players, like little moments that you just, if you have them on your podcast on the computer, there's no like little moments, there's no passerbys, whatever. But like, we would go up to players and grab them. And that like, obviously takes a lot of like power, like you have to get yourself up to do it. Like,
dude, it's nerve wracking. I don't like doing that. I don't like that part at all. I feel like a nuisance, and I don't want them to be like to say something mean. And then every time I'm watching them play, I'll be like, this guy hates me, but I'm also rooting for him. Like, it's like, it's painful mental gymnastics. I'm not good at them.
But like, we learned how to do that there. And thinking about how much better we know so many of the guys on the team today than we did when we landed, and how much more equipped we are at doing those interviews, asking questions, and like being able to respond and like take an interview from one step to the next. Like we are on such we're so much better than we used to be. And that's not to say that we're like these like media savants or anything. Like, we're definitely like not that. We're still very new at this, but we were nervous as hell at that point. And just to see how far it's come since then, it's been cool. So yeah, my favorite moments were those like throw us into the fire moments, because that is definitely where we've grown the most this year. Any final words?
Yeah. And I'll go really quick on my favorite, even though I kind of already suggested it, but gosh, I mean, there are so many. I mean, when all four of us were there for the Yankee series, and we shared the field with a couple of A-list celebs out there, or I should say some of us shared the field. Some of us creepily stood behind them while the media were talking to two of them. And then when photos came out, kind of looking in the background a little bit. Sammy, let me know if this sounds familiar to you when I keep going. That might have been it. I think maybe as a whole, the best night of the year, at least from the Sox year, had to be when the Celtics came and then they walked it off later on.
Oh, that was great.
That had to be the best night of the year. Maybe not like game of the year, but that was the best night. Best moment between the four of us has to be when we were there with Damon and Affleck.
Oh yeah, dude. Best vibe night might have been that Blue Jays game. The best games were like that and the Yoshida game tying homer.
I know I've never told this on the podcast, but when Casey Affleck and Matt Damon were speaking to the media, I kind of like got in the media scrum and was like just listening in, and I got a little too close to Casey Affleck, where I was like right behind him on his shoulder, and he turned around and gave me like a scathing look, like, get the fuck off me, dude. Who are you? And it was like, oh no, the mayor of Duncan is gonna yell at me. It was super, super awkward. I don't think it got caught on camera, but it was very cringe, very uncomfortable.
We've got the photos though.
Yeah. I freaked out Casey Affleck.
That's your accomplishment. Not many can say that.
My aura.
Yeah. All right, we got to wrap this thing. We understandably went long. I told you at the beginning there was a ton to talk about. We had a ton of Red Sox stuff to talk about. There were so many things. I listed a few things at the beginning that I knew we weren't going to have time to get to. We will have so many shows this offseason talking about all this stuff. And I mean, we'll give you guys an up. Well, I mean, we'll be in your ears tomorrow, but we'll give you guys an update on sort of how we figure to, you know, schedule the offseason and go about things. And we'll be transparent about all that when that time comes. But God, till episode 139, man, just subscribe. If you haven't already, I mean, what better day to subscribe than the last day of the season? All the offseason talk that you've been waiting for, that's really our meat and potatoes of just what makes us like so interested in this is the transactional part of the sport. And the offseason is where that happens, and we're going to have so many conversations. So just subscribe and get those notifications out. Wherever you get your podcasts, you'll get those notifications when episodes drop if you subscribe. Also on YouTube on the WEI channel. We've got a Play Tessie playlist there. You can find all our episodes there. So hit the thumbs up on those videos. And obviously rate us 5 stars on all your podcast platforms. Follow us on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. And man, signing off for the last time. I'll say that this is the final time we will be signing off in the 2024 season, because when we've got an episode in your ears tomorrow, we're on to 2025.
We're on 2025. Kenley's not on the team anymore.
Nope. Because this episode counts as 2024. When you put your head down on your pillow, you're going to wake up the next day. When you open your eyes, it's 2025.
Yep, and the playoffs have already ended. Congrats to the Astros on the World Series. Very impressive. Sorry, Yankees, maybe next year.
Congrats to the Tigers on the World Series. Go Tigers.
All in on the Astros.
Way to go, Arizona Diamondbacks. Redemption.
Joe, by the time people listen to this show, that team's going to be eliminated. I hope you're wrong, because I'm rooting for them.
Go Astros.
I'm rooting for them. I don't know which of those three teams I want to get bounced. I don't know. Whatever. Go Sox, man. On to 2025. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.